For Illinois Newsroom, I'm Jim Meadows, and here's an interview recorded January 30th with Dr. Charles Ellington of Camargo, a family physician with a practice in Arthur. Ellington is one of four Republican candidates for the March 17th primary in Illinois' 15th congressional district, which covers much of eastern and southeastern Illinois.
Well, Dr. Ellington, why are you running for Congress? What caused you to make that decision?
Sure. I'm running because I've seen a failure of leadership in Washington, and I think we've seen this evidenced by a number of policies that I think have really demonstrated just a failure of understanding and failure of leadership on the part of the political establishment. A big one is healthcare. When you look at the Affordable Care Act, I think although it did do some good things, I think it created a bureaucratic morass that I think has created a huge burden on physicians and patients.
So healthcare is going to be one of your priorities if you're elected?
Yes, sir.
What would you want to see as a replacement for the Affordable Care Act in terms of what do you want whatever gets implemented to do?
Sure. I believe I'm the only Republican that is not calling for a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. I think that has been tried, and what they realized is that would pull the rug out from under 20 million Americans that are relying on it, as flawed as it is. And so I think it needs to be overhauled. And so the first thing I would say is we need to take a step back from what we're thinking about and say, what kind of healthcare system do we want? Elizabeth Warren and several of the other Democratic presidential candidates have put forth proposals, things like Medicare for All. Mayor Pete's version is a slow version of Medicare for All. Joe Biden's is another slow version of the same thing. I think what all these proposals are missing is we're wanting to pay a huge price for something that may not even work. Okay, let me be more specific. In the United States, we spend more on healthcare than any other developed country in the world, yet we rank at the bottom of healthcare indicators. Every study that has looked at this shows the same thing. We also have an infant mortality rate that is worse than Cuba and worse than Bosnia. And so we have to ask ourselves, how can we get the most bang for our buck? How can we spend money to get the best benefit? And what study after study has shown is that if somebody has access to a primary care doctor, that is a family physician who they know over time, what will happen is they'll be healthier, they'll live longer, and they'll cost the system less money. And so I think any healthcare system has to be based upon primary care and put a focus on the role of family physicians, internal medicine doctors, pediatricians, those sorts of physicians. We also know under the Affordable Care Act, about 50% of the care is provided by primary care, but they only get 2-3% of the total spending. And so more funding needs to go for primary care, and more funding needs to go for rural communities. Rural communities were also promised help to be able to meet all the bureaucratic requirements of the Affordable Care Act, and that help never came. I want to change that.
You're running for a seat that a fellow Republican, John Shimkus, is leaving after 12 terms in office. How would you compare your priorities to what Mr. Shimkus focused on during his time in office?
Sure. I think Congressman Shimkus was an excellent congressman and served our country honorably, both as a congressman and as a military officer. And so certainly I will have some big shoes to fill. I think that my perspective as a family physician and as a licensed attorney, I think probably my focus will be a little different than his, and I'll look at things perhaps a little bit different perspective than he did.
There's been a lot of talk over the last few years about a growing and sharp political divide in the U.S., making it difficult for things to get done in Washington and even for people from different sides to talk about the nation's problems. How would you deal with that situation as a congressman?
Sure. I mean, I think that's an excellent question, and that's a huge problem our country is facing right now. I believe that real leaders build bridges. I think that's what leadership is all about. And part of that, I think, requires a little bit of humility. When you go into an office and you believe that you're right and everyone else is wrong and you're not willing to sit down and listen to the other side, I think that simply sets you up and sets our country up for those kinds of divides. And I'm seeing that get worse and worse and worse. What I would do is I would be willing to work with anybody who in good faith wants to sit down and work to solve problems for this country. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, that doesn't matter. What matters to me are the people of the 15th District and people of this country and how can we best serve them.
With agriculture such an important part of the 15th District's economy, what are your priorities for representing farmers in Congress.
Absolutely. I think agriculture is a huge priority. And I think that, you know, as a supporter of President Trump, I think one of the concerns has been the tariffs. The farmers I have talked to have felt that the tariffs have not been as harmful as they've been portrayed to be. I do, however, believe in free markets. I believe in fair trade, open markets. And I believe, especially with China, I do think that if you look at over time, fair trade and fair markets lead to prosperity. Let me give you an example. Before the Great Depression was something called the Long Depression, and it was in the last part of the 1800s, and it was an economy that just could not get up. And the only country that had economic growth during that period of time was Great Britain. And they were the only country that did not have trade barriers. And so I think that although, you know, I will defer to the president on this issue, you know, currently I think he maybe understands things that maybe the rest of us don't as a president. I think by and large, I think we need to have open trade and open markets because that's what's going to help farmers and it's going to help everybody in this country.
The way that the trade relations with China are being conducted with the ongoing trade dispute, one agreement reached just recently called a phase one between U.S. and China.
Yes.
Reached in January. Are things going in the right direction?
You know, I do believe so. And I think that, again, we have a president who's actually willing to stand up and to maybe upset the status quo a little bit, but for the purpose of getting fair trade with China. And I think we're seeing the results of that. I think the trade dispute will be resolved. I think, by and large, our president is a successful businessman. I think he knows how to negotiate. And I think that phase one indicates, I think, the direction that our country will be going in this matter.
On your campaign website, you write about how you support making the tax cuts that were signed during the Trump administration permanent, and you also support passage of a balanced budget constitutional amendment along with entitlement reform. What sort of spending plan for the federal government do you foresee with such an approach?
Sure. First of all, I think a balanced budget amendment is absolutely necessary because history has shown us that politicians just don't have the will to be able to make the hard choices to bring our budget into balance. There was just some information that came out, I believe, yesterday that said that we have a $1 trillion deficit and it will remain that for the foreseeable future. If we don't do something, the economy of this country is not going to thrive in the long term, and my kids and my grandkids are going to face some very difficult times and very difficult choices. I think we can start first by eliminating waste in our government. There's a vast and huge amount of waste that occurs in spending. I can just point to our campaign, for example, and other campaigns. You know, our campaign has not taken money from PACs. Our campaign has not taken money from Washington politicians and insiders. We have a small but effective budget and a small but effective marketing plan. We're not wasting money in our campaign, and that's how I will lead as a congressman.
I've always found in my experience when things are headed towards spending cuts, elected officials or people running to be elected officials don't like to get specific on where cuts would be made.
That's correct.
But can you be specific, at least in terms of where you see beyond the waste, fraud, and abuse category where cuts should be made, our priorities should be redirected?
You know, I think there's a number of them, and I'll just give you an example. There's a lot of talk about welfare and welfare reform. In other words, the spending that we give to poor people. But what little discussion is going on is about corporate welfare. A lot of money is going to help bail out banks, help fund large corporations. And if you look at the amount of money that we spend on that, that's vastly greater than the amount of money we spend on helping poor people be able to afford food. And I think that'd be one area where I'd start.
Unemployment in Illinois is at a historic low, at least as far as record keeping is concerned. But you note on your campaign website that unemployment is actually somewhat higher in the 15th district.
Yes, sir.
Why is that, and how do you want to address it in Congress?
Sure. And I think it's actually variable within our district as well. And so, for example, in my community of Arthur, where I practice medicine, some of the industries and businesses are having trouble even finding people to fill the jobs. Yet when you go further south, down to the southern part of the state, Gallatin County, Saline County, in those areas, you find unemployment is a huge problem. And I think that the best way to do that is through industry. So if we help develop an environment and create an environment where businesses can grow and businesses can thrive, that will ultimately lead to the development of jobs, businesses, and factories. I'll give you an example. When I was in Shawneetown recently, I talked to a business owner that owns a convenience store, and the gas tax imposed by our governor, our current governor, is just killing him. People are going across the river into Kentucky to get gas. The new minimum wage law has forced him to lay off one of his employees. Those things do not help grow an economy. What helps grow an economy are lower taxes, finding ways to actually help businesses thrive. They will then be able to hire people and create jobs and create opportunity for others.
One thing you write about on your campaign website is the importance of freeing up the coal industry.
Yes.
Do you see that as something of a specific importance for the 15th District?
Yes, I do. We know that we have about 300 years worth of coal in this country, 300 years. Okay, that's significant. We also know that mine after mine after mine in southern Illinois has shut down. Most recently, the Wildcat mine in southern Illinois shut down, leaving 200 people out of work. The downstream impact of that is going to be much greater than 200 people. We also know that there was a project called FutureGen that had the capacity to have what are called near-zero emission coal plants with carbon capture technology. They already have the plans, and they already have proven that that can work right here in our district. And there was a plan to actually build a plant like that in Douglas County and or Coles County. For some reason, those plans were put on hold. That opportunity, I believe, still exists. That's one way I think we can help revitalize the coal industry, yet protect the environment at the same time.
I remember the FutureGen project, which I guess went from place to place from the Bush administration to the Obama administration.
Yes.
And one of the things I remember coming out of that is there seemed to be a certain amount of reluctance on both the part of the federal government and the coal industry to pay for the project. Everybody was wanting the other side to pay more. How do you work with research like that, knowing that it's going to be expensive? And also, from what I can tell from the other projects which exist around the world for clean coal capture and sequestration, mm-hmm. is that it's not a quick fix. This isn't something that's going to give you technology in 2 years.
You know, that's absolutely correct. I think through public-private partnerships, I think you're going to have to be able to make this work. And so I think people just need to be able to sit down and find a way to be able to fund this and to build it. I think having private industry and government work together to build these plants is going to be your only option. But if you're a coal company and you're sitting on $1 billion worth of coal, there might be a little motivation to come to the table and negotiate.
Finally, I just wanted to ask if I could draw out of you some talk about another issue that's important to you here that you would want to focus on as a congressman for the 15th District.
Absolutely. One of the areas is border security and dealing with immigration issues and immigration reform. There's been a lot of talk about the wall that President Trump wants to build, and I certainly believe in having secure borders and being able to make sure that our southern border in particular is secure. But I would also like to say that the long-term solution has to transcend just a border wall. A lot of people have talked about, and I'm an advocate of, something called a Marshall Plan for Latin America. It would be very similar to the Marshall Plan we had after World War II for Europe. What we found is when we went in and we invested into those countries and helped develop their economy, we had many, many times return on our own investment, plus we helped them. I think if we're concerned about individuals coming to our country illegally, I think one of the things we can do is help develop their economy so they have a good, solid, strong economy so they will be happy at home. No one wants to leave their home. And if you're a mother in Honduras and life is so bad for you that you want to send your minor child to the United States with the hope that they're going to make it, I think that we can think about, well, maybe they'd like to stay at home and maybe like to have their family there. I think in the long term, this is a solution, I think, that will pay off vastly both for the United States and for Latin America, both economically and with regard to our national security.
Well, Dr. Ellington, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you very much. It was good to be here.